Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Aletheia Church, Boston. Aletheia exists to bring the truth, grace, and changing power of the gospel for the glory of God and the good of all people. For more information, visit aletheia.org.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Kane. Just appreciate that. Good morning, everybody. Good to see you all. My name is Donnie, one of the pastors here at Aletheia. Glad to be with you. If anybody has like the spiritual gift of casting out demons of screens, today is your day. Come on up. No, I'm just kidding. I really appreciate being here at the YMCA. And one of the challenges is always just setting up every week. We have a great group of volunteer teams who help put all this together and overcome just little things of you can't just set it up and walk away. You've got to take it down and re-put it back every week, which creates a ton of variables. And so if you too would like to involve yourself with some variables, come serve on the team. We'd love to have you with us each week at Aletheia. That's not what we're actually talking about today. We're talking about resting. And so we're talking about resting in God and what that looks like, continuing our service series in the Art of Rest. So if you have a Bible, you can turn to Psalm chapter 116. That's where we're going to be today. But as we get there, I wanted to highlight one of the announcements because there's an opportunity next week that doesn't come around very often for us. When Abby was on stage, Abigail, she was giving you the announcement. She talked about we have service Saturdays coming up. This is something that we do regularly and highly encourage you all to be involved in blessing our city. This is something that is a regular discipline, a regular part of who we are. But this summer, we're actually going to try to bless this building a little bit, this YMCA. Now, many of you know, we don't own this place. This is not our building. But by God's grace, we've rented it here for many years. 8 years, coming up on 8 years in just like a month or two. And I'm very thankful to have been here for all this time and have a pretty cool relationship with this space. In fact, when we first got here, this room was shut down for 3 to 4 months a year during the summers because there was no air conditioning and kids couldn't play. It was just melt your face off hot. So we did the Christian thing and we had services in here for one summer. And then we said, never do that again. And we actually decided to bless the Y and we raised like $100,000 and put in some air conditioning and painted the room. It used to be that color yellow on that one pipe over there. That was this room. Yes. Yes. Some of you weren't here. It was horrible. And so, but we painted it for them and really used this space. I mean, it's still a gym, but they're able to use it for the community like 6 days a week now, the days that we're not in here. And we're really excited about that. Well, this summer, well, many of you know that we're renting the theater space as part of our lease. Now it's upstairs. In fact, if you want to stay and hang out after the day's service and connect with people, out these two doors off the gym, that there's stairwells that go up one floor. We have a theater space. It kind of acts like almost like a fellowship hall on Sundays. It's also where we host worship nights and things of that nature. And it's ours to use, and the Y uses it as well. But that room also is not air-conditioned. It's hot. Women's table yesterday, was it warm? A little warm in there. It needs a little bit of work. And we thought, you know, part of being Christians is being a blessing to the people around us. And so even when we were coming into that space, we had people who just wanted to give. None of them actually went to our church. They said, hey, we want to be a blessing to your church. You got any big projects that you'd like to do? Not just like normal budget stuff, but like actually like to help both serve you all, but even bigger than that. We said, well, we got this space in the theater. So these few people came and they gave $50,000 to help us bless the YMCA. And we're like, okay, like let's use this thing. And so we're going to redo the theater a little more than it already has been, like paint on the walls and fixing some of the walls, fixing some old water damage that has now been mitigated. The problem's no longer there, but also air conditioning it. And so, the challenge for us is we want to lock arms and do that together. So if you love swinging a hammer or you've got a doctorate in drilling, Steve would love you to come work with him. Steve's the other bearded brother who has on the handlebars. You might see him walking around the halls. He's on our staff, and he loves warm hugs. He's just like Olaf. And so you come work with him, give him a big hug, tell him I told you to do it, and you'll have a great time working with him. We're going to be blessing them, but part of that, the opportunity next week is we're going to take up an offering to supplement that initial $50,000 that came in. So we're looking for like another $25,000 to be able to pay for everything. It's a lot of work that needs to be done. And if you feel like we're twisting your arm, you don't have to participate. But if you want to be a part of that, we as a church family take up a special offering again to be a blessing to this place and hopefully blessing in such a way that will outlive our time here, such that people even who are like, hey, remember that church that used to meet here? Man, I wish they were back here. Like, there was so much. Look at all the things they did. Look at the benefits of them being here. Isn't God good to us in our city? Like, that's the kind of testimony you want to have. So that's happening next week. Just to prepare you, service is happening this week and next week. You can sign up online and look for a great video coming about that on social medias today. Now, Psalm 116, we're going to get to work. We're going to read about the art of rest. We're going to read this idea of what does it mean to rest. And we're going to pray and get to work after we read this passage. Here we go. Verse 1, chapter 116. I love the Lord because he has heard my voice and my pleas for mercy. Because he inclined his ear to me, therefore I will call on him as long as I live. The snares of death encompassed me. The pangs of Sheol laid hold on me. I suffered distress and anguish. Then I called on the name of the Lord. O Lord, I pray, deliver my soul. Gracious is the Lord and righteous. Our God is merciful. The Lord preserves the simple. When I was brought low, he saved me. Return, O my soul, to your rest. For the Lord has dealt bountifully with you. Would you pray with me this morning? God, we thank you that you promised to meet with us. Even in our brief moments together, as we come together in your name, you are in our midst. So Holy Spirit, I pray that you would increase in us, that we would feel your presence. God, you've already been so gracious to us, even in our time of worship and singing, to come and meet. Lord, I pray for more of that as we study your word. And we spend the rest of our just few moments together today. It's in Christ's name I pray. Amen. Now, we're in a series called The Art of Rest. For those of you who don't know, maybe just checking our church out here for the first time, this is based on a book Pastor Adam, our lead pastor, wrote, and it's published by a real publisher, and so you can get them wherever books are sold, and or you can get them cheapest here for cheaper than you can buy them online. But that being said, that wasn't a book plug. It's just as much to say to recognize where we kind of came up with this idea. We are going to continue looking at this idea, this concept of resting in God, or what does it mean to be people who rest well, which is something that is foreign to our city. And so just by simply doing this series, I've gotten a lot more questions. I know some of our staff is like, hey, what do you do on your day off? What does rest look like for you? And so I thought I'd let you know what I did yesterday on my day off. Our staff, most of us have, most is Friday/Saturday, depending on the week, but those are the 2 days that we take off. And so here's what a day in Pastor Donnie's life, day off, looks like. So yesterday, I got up before 6 a.m. So about 5, some of you are already groaning. So like 5:30, I didn't set an alarm. When you have that many kids, you don't set alarms, you just wake up. And so it was before 6, I woke up, and I got up and got dressed, and I went outside. My wife was already gardening. My wife was already in the garden working. So this, I mean, it's pre-6, like, or the sun is up this time of year, that time, if you didn't know, the sun is up. So I go out, I help my wife in the garden for a little while, and I live a few miles away, and so we can have chickens, and so we do. And so here are some expensive eggs, y'all. And so I had to help her do some stuff, like some of our chickens were just, they're all broody, I don't know if you know what that means, but so we had to like kind of do some stuff to kind of help get them laying again, because that's expensive eggs. You're going to work for me, chicken. And so I help her with that. And then I do what you do on your day off. Some of you around here know, I went for a 4.5-mile run. Now, I know what you're thinking. Like, you're looking at me, and you're like, that's how he looks that awesome. And so, but no, I am not a slave to this body. Some of you run to look good. I run to eat another cheeseburger. So mission accomplished. So I got back from my run. And by this time, most of my kids were awake, and so we made breakfast, and we sat down together, had breakfast, and then I did the next thing. I said, you know what? Got to get out. It's Saturday. Look at the yard. It's time to mow the yard. So I jumped out on my yard and started mowing my yard. Now, yards are these things in places close to here that are like grass, and they're green. I know you don't see them for those of you who live in Cambridge or Boston, but there are still places that have yards. I happen to live on one of them. And so we live a few miles away. Went to the north, and we actually have almost an acre of land, which is unheard of, and with chickens in a garden. And so I go out to start mowing my yard. Now, I bought my house a few years ago. I'm mowing my yard with the lawnmower that the previous homeowner left me. Okay, so not self-propelled, push. You just push it. I mean, it's got an engine, but it's all me pushing it, right? So I'm working. And I get, I don't know, about a quarter of the way done with my yard, and then it happens. This is the coolest part of the day. A truck pulls up with a big old trailer on the back of it in my next door neighbor's yard, and it's the lawn service for the next guy, for my next door neighbor's yard. I kind of look at him, and this 17-year-old kid, we'll just call him Billy, hops out and looks at me, and he kind of gives me that, what's up? And it, And ladies, you might know, like, hey, he's just acknowledging my presence. No, he was like, what's up, old man? I'm about to school you on how to mow a yard. And I was like, I'll see that bet and I'll raise that. Like, it's like basically how it went. So I am now determined. This is really, I'm letting you into the deep, dark recesses of my soul. I am determined I will finish my yard before those two guys can finish his yard on their riding lawnmowers and all their weedies. So I am almost running behind my lawnmower, pushing it over this hill, like I'm destroying it. And lo and behold, solid 45 minutes later, I'm like panting, but I beat them. I am like done. But of course, you know, when I pass them, I'm not panting. I'm light on my feet, flexing everything in my upper body so nothing moves. Like, he's like, that guy's rock solid. He's dominating his yard. Man, I wish he could work for us. No, you can't have me. I might be 20 years your senior. I'm better. And by the time they pull away, I'm washing my wife's car saying, see you guys later. I'm not kidding. This totally happened. And I looked at my watch, I'm like, 25,000 steps before lunch, baby. Killed it. That is the greatest day of rest I've had in a long time. It was awesome. Man, owned those guys. But what does that have to do with rest? I'm not sure. Some of you are already judging me like, that guy doesn't know how to rest at all. We've already, if you haven't been with us, we've been talking about rest, and it's not exactly what we think of it. It's not just doing nothing necessarily. A lot of what I was doing yesterday was what avocation, the idea of it's not my job. So if I was a lawn man or if I had my own lawn business, that probably wouldn't be restful to me. I actually derive great joy from working in my yard and physically working. I don't get to do it a lot on my every day, and I can actually see immediate results when I mow my yard, which is kind of nice for a change. And so, so I do that, and so that's a little bit of what my day off looked like. And there were other things like a glorious nap in the afternoon yesterday, and times spent. But I say all that because a lot of times I get asked, or more recently I get asked, hey, what do you do on your day off? Like, how do you rest? What do you do? What do you don't do? And this is the kind of question that comes a lot. What do you do in your vacation? Like, what do you stop doing? What do you do? And I think that's a good question, but it's not the only question and probably not the most helpful question when we think about resting. Rather than asking what do we do, I think the more important question is, who are you with? Who are you with? When I talk about that day, yesterday, I was with people. I was with my wife. There were times we were working in the garden together. We actually loved to work together outdoors. I would spend time with her in conversation, hanging out. I got to spend a lot of time with my kids. Like, every meal I had, I was with my children. They got to talk to them about some of the stuff that's happening in their lives, or some of it's what God is saying in their life, but also a lot of just kind of everyday stuff. And, you know, what are they reading? What are they learning about? What are some of the challenges they face? Got to correct them a little bit crazy. I have 5 children, for those who don't know. It's a little crazy sometimes. And so sometimes I spend my days off or my days of rejuvenating or recuperating with friends, actually. I'll talk to you a little bit more what that looks like in a little bit. But it's not always just me and my family. There are people. But most importantly, if I'm truly resting well, if I'm truly, truly resting and being rejuvenated and recovering from a most usually pretty hard week, I'm with God. I'm in His presence. I'm with Him, and that's kind of an important thing to kind of highlight as we go forward. The idea here is we're going to be looking at how our relationships require rest. Relationships require rest, and so when we have this idea about rest, or the biblical idea of rest, there's a relational component to it. There's a relational slant that we've got to look at this, or we're going to do it wrong, or we're going to miss out on all the benefits that are available to us in this biblical idea of rest. And this is hard for us. This is hard for us in our city because we rush. We rush from thing to thing, appointment to appointment, job to job, social function gathering, you know, T-ball game if you're like me, you know, maybe ministry moment or, you know, encouraging moment or just church thing, work thing, family thing. You know, Netflix binge, bed, whatever we got to do. We move around constantly. And Pastor Adam in his book actually highlights this idea of rushing and what we're kind of over many times trying to compensate for. And he says this, and I'm very thankful for it. He highlights three areas that rushing helps us hide, actually, from very important things. The first one is that rushing around in our culture, in our city, it helps us hide from ourselves. When we're constantly going, and we're constantly moving and refusing to rest, when we're engaging even very good things at times, whether it's our vocation or a degree program or even relationships, when we rush around, we actually hide ourselves from the not-so-good things about ourselves, the things that we don't like. Those shameful parts inside of us, we never have the space to actually consider our deepest hurts, our habits, the things that hold us back. We never actually engage in those things because we're running around because it's painful. And so then God also doesn't really have an opportunity to heal them. That's one way in which we hide as we rush. Another way that we hide is that we hide from others. As we rush around, we hide from others. Being busy really allows us to say, far enough away from other people that they don't really know who we are, and yet we're close enough to kind of give us the misperception that we actually know people, or people actually know us, that we're actually in a relationship, but we're just actually doing a lot of stuff together. Now, I know some of you are wired, you're go-getters, you're go-go-go all the time, and you're like, no, I actually have good friends. I'm actually really good friends with my coworkers. We actually, you convince yourself that I actually do a lot of stuff with a lot of people. I have these different affinity groups. I have these different hobbies that we do. I have this softball team. I have this volleyball team. I have this group of coworkers that we hang out with late nights and really kind of hang out and go to games together. I go see the Sox, the Celtics. Sports is a thing across the river, if you're Cantabrigians. But we go to these moments and we hang out and be careful. Be careful with this one. Out of all of the ones I'm about to talk about, this rushing, this hiding you from one another, sometimes we can almost, through relationship or through activity with others, actually cover over the fact that we're not deeply in relationship with others. It's kind of like you and this person, this kind of person I'm talking about, is like me and my 17-year-old lawn mowing man of my neighbor's house. We don't actually know each other. We're just doing the same thing at the same time in a close proximity to one another. And I can make that like a thing, and like I could just time it so every time he comes, we're out there together, and we're doing it together, and I feel like he knows me somehow, but the reality is when something breaks in my life, he doesn't know. He doesn't know the names of my kids. He doesn't know the challenges I face every day. Oh, he knows that we have yards to mow. Same way sometimes the guy next to you or the gal next to you in your cubicle or your degree program, you can fool yourself into thinking that you're in deep relationship just by doing activity, similar activity, side by side, or even in competition with one another. But that is not the same as true relationship that helps produce rest in you. It's not the same. So be careful. Absolutely do those things. Have fun on your volleyball team. Hang out with your coworkers. Absolutely. But don't allow that to be a false substitute for the deep need of your soul, which is true restful relationship. And that ultimately is found in God, and which is the third area that rushing hurts us. It actually helps hide us from God. We do this all the time. I see it a ton in my own life. I see it in others' lives. As we live in this city, we our activity hides us from God. In a way, it becomes most insidious, and I don't mean insidious, I guess that's a technically the right term. The most dangerous way in which this happens is for those of us who are Christians. The idea that we can be busy, and I'm doing this because God told me to, or I have this calling upon my life, and I'm going to do these things for God, and the whole time that activity is actually distancing me from Him relationally. We can trick ourselves into thinking that activity makes God happy when He's ultimately asking for relationship. He's come to us to relate to us, to be known by Him and to know Him. And so we see this in the Bible. Jesus is talking in Matthew chapter 7. He gives this example. He says, many of you are going to come to me on that day, talking about judgment. You're going to say, Lord, didn't we prophesy in your name? Didn't we cast out demons in your name? Didn't we do all these things because we were good church folk who wanted to do ministry and help other people out? And Jesus is going to look at them and say, I don't know who are you. And I say, depart from me. I don't know who you are. So there's a way to read that, like, oh, those ministers better to get together. Let me just tell you, as people who attend this church, who call this church home, You have great callings on your life. God's gifted you with some pretty cool things. I love being in this city, in this place, not because we're better than anywhere else, but because the amount of people who have just unique and specialized gifts and callings by God and who are touching so many areas of our world, there's a higher concentration here. And so I get to hear the things that you're researching or the things that you're actively looking to do or to accomplish in the earth. And I get so excited about that. But here's a warning from this stage. Be careful that when one day you stand before God and you say, God, look at how I fixed health care in your name because you called me to do it. Or God, look, we finally found the cure to cancer. Thank you, in your name. God, we broke the cycle of poverty in your name. And you better be careful when you walk out the day and say, God, look at all the things I did for you. That scripture scares me. Like, what? Who'd you do it for? I don't know you. Be careful. Your activity can distance you relationally from God. I'm not saying this to make you question any kind of powerful experiences you've had or your salvation, but just to help you realize that we can do things for God without God, and they become the wrong things altogether. So rushing actually harms us from this relational side of our rest. So how do we get that back? Well, that's really what rest is all about. How do we grow in relationship with God as we have these busy things, as we have these just rushing that is part of our city, and honestly, we'll all probably have to do it a little bit. How do we live in this tension? Well, I think the way that God gives us is genius. It's called rest. Relationships require rest. Pastor Adam unpacks this idea in his book. The Psalm chapter 116, verse 1 and 2 says, I love the Lord because he has heard my voice and my pleas for mercy, because he inclined his ear to me. Therefore, I will call on him as long as I live. The kind of rest that God calls us into is a gracious rest. That's to be contrasted with bad work that we do in our lives. This is a gracious thing that God gives us, a gracious moment he is inviting us into. You see, when we rush around all the time and we misuse our working hours or the responsibilities that we have, that lets us hide. But when we enter into God's gracious rest, we are no longer hidden. God, you got to understand, God is actually ready to be with us. God condescends into our experience to develop a relationship with us. I kind of had this idea. I was thinking through this message several days ago, and there was a great former member of a church who moved to the West Coast and got a job at Microsoft several years ago when she graduated from MIT. She's a wonderful, wonderful woman, and a great woman of God. And she was just visiting last week, and as I was thinking through this picture popped in my head about this idea of what does it mean to have this kind of relationship with God, where God graciously enters into our story. And I don't know why, it's probably because I was thinking about it, I ran into her, I was like, it'd be the same thing as like she walks into her first work, not the same thing, but a similar thing, of her walking into her first work function, and like Bill Gates is there. Bill Gates zeroes in on her, walks across the room, engages with her, and says, hey, I'm Bill. Like, nice to meet you. And says, tell me all about yourself. Hey, I know you don't know anything about coding yet. Like, we just hired you straight out, maybe you know a little bit, but you're like straight out of MIT. Like, I'm going to help you. I'm going to engage with you. I'm going to develop a friendship with you and help you grow in who you're called to be while you're here. I mean, that's mind-blowing. Like, the idea, like, even that idea, like, hey, if that ever happens to any of you, call me. I want to know whatever you did to make that happen. But that was just a kind of that thought popped in my head after I left her and I was studying this. That would have been wild. Didn't happen, but that would have been wild. God's even better than that. God's even better than the top boss of your organization or the president of your university, if you're teaching, or whatever the case may be, your experience. Because God knows, he actually knows your CV, he knows your resume, he knows everything about you, what you've actually been through. He didn't just pick you out of a crowd. He's like, no. And not only does he know all the things that you've done, he knows how crazy you are on the inside. Like, nobody else thinks they're crazy. Okay, he knows how crazy I am on the inside and all the weird things I think and the funny things I do, like competing with my neighbor's lawn man. Like, he knows that, and he still comes and he drops into and graciously comes and he comes and he listens to me. He hears my voice and he hears my pleas for mercy. And because God is graciously entered into all the crazy that is me, he's entered into that. You better believe I will call on him as long as I live, because he's been gracious to me. There's a gracious aspect to God's grace that can only really be experienced as we rest in him. God's been gracious to us, and these moments help remind us of that. The second thing that we see in this is verse 5, gracious is the Lord and righteous. Our God is merciful. The Lord preserves the simple. When I was brought low, he saved me. God is all about having deep fellowship with us. Not shallowness, not surface level relationship, but God is calling us into a place of deep fellowship with him. Again, he's not afraid of all the internal just issues that you have or I have. He's gracious, merciful, and when we are brought low, he will save us. When we are brought low, when we're walking through the just funk in our lives or issues, he reaches down and saves us. One of the things I wasn't expecting when I moved here to Boston, with all the people doing all the things, accomplishing all this great stuff, these great institutions of higher learning, these top-notch, just jobs and or even government or healthcare, like all these things that are happening, is moving at this fast pace. You know what I wasn't prepared for? I mean, I was warned about it, but I really wasn't prepared for was the loneliness. Not personally, like, although I have walked through parts of that since I've lived here in the city the past 8 years, but the loneliness that pervades our city as we do all these things all the time together. So lonely. Praying through that, thinking through that. The rest of God calls us to something different. It calls us to deep fellowship with him. And again, that requires us to be vulnerable with him and not hide. But men and women of God, for those of you who are Christians, reading the scriptures or knowing anything about God should let you know from the beginning, you are never alone. God is with you. We need human interaction, absolutely. We'll talk about that in a second. But God is with you. God sees all, knows all, sees you, and chooses to be with you anyway. Chooses to draw near to you, calls you into relationship with him anyway. And so when we talk about this idea of loneliness, my pushback so much about the nature of our culture is, well, of course we are. We're running around all the time with people that we're not growing in deep relationship with, doing things like just constantly just trying to distract ourselves from the reality that we are not really known by anyone, and we try to lump God in that camp when God is sitting here saying, "Will you come and find rest in me? I'm right here. Would you slow down for just a moment? Slow down just a moment. When I was brought low, he saved me." So many times we find ourselves, God is standing right there. Find ourselves in those moments, God is standing right there. God is right there with us. And rather than taking those moments to remember what God has done for us, man or woman of God, we medicate the pain away with the next Netflix binge before we can finally fall asleep. We keep busying ourselves in such a way that we don't have to really deal with the fact that we're actually deep down pretty lonely. God calls us into deep fellowship, and it's available, but we've got to stop. We've got to slow down. We've got to spend time with him. Well, that sounds pretty hypocritical. Pastor Donnie, you were talking about how you were running yesterday, and you were doing all these things, and I say, like, when I was running, this god-awful 4.5 miles, when I was running yesterday morning, I was praying. My family's walking through some stuff right now that is just blindsided, and my larger family, and just praying, asking for God's help in that, asking for his comfort and his peace upon relatives and friends, asking for help with my kids and some of the things they were walking through, and actually asking him what he wanted to speak to me. God, I'm listening. I'm out here by myself. There's no distractions other than the pain in my legs. Would you please just meet with me in these moments? When I'm working in my garden, I'm marveling at his creation. I'm thanking him for his provision for my life, that I can actually grow tomatoes or, you know, what the case may be. And God, you're so good to me. I don't deserve this. I don't deserve this small plot of land and a little garden. Worshiping him, spending time with him. This deep fellowship with God. When I'm reading my Bible yesterday afternoon, fellowshipping with God. God, what would you speak to me? What would you speak to our church tomorrow? Help me. I don't want to just come up and say some stuff about you. I'd rather show how I know you a little bit. We've got to let our guards down with God and honestly with some other people too. All right, this next point, verse 7. It's probably my favorite verse. Return, O my soul, to your rest, for the Lord has dealt bountifully with you. This is the idea of sharing moments with God, not misusing our time of rest. So again, I've been talking about rest isn't only about the stuff you do. It goes much beyond that. And it's about who you're with. It's about going deeper into relationship with God and others and ultimately finding our healing in these moments. But the idea here, again, this third point of sharing moments with God. I know some of you are introverted. I know there's a higher concentration of introverts around here because nerdy people are more introverted. And so, hey, I'm with you. I'll introvert any of you any day of the week, okay? Like, if there were an introvert Olympics, I would dominate you. I'd be like Michael Phelps. Like, okay, like, this would be over. Like, you wouldn't even need to get in the pool. Like, okay, this is, and so, and at the same time, I think our culture uses it as an excuse way too often. Like, come on. Like, so I never say it from the stage, but I'm just trying to acknowledge, I feel you when you get to, like, no, when I'm at my day of rest, bring people into that. No, thank you. My words are done. They were done 2 days ago. I need a moment. I don't want to talk. I don't want to be around anybody. I feel the same proclivities and inclination as you do. But I think it's wrong. Many of you are, maybe I haven't talked about it in a while. I was raised on a farm, which is apparently why I now have chickens in a garden. But I was raised on a farm in the South. And one of the men who had the most impact in my life is my grandfather. Helped raise me in a lot of ways. My dad, I got my work ethic. My dad worked 7 days a week for like 30 years, and so I spent a lot of time with my grandfather. And I'm very thankful for a lot of deposit that was put in my life by my grandfather as well as my father. But my grandfather had a huge impact as well. And my grandfather he had a farm, and I would work with him. It was my first job. I'd work with him. And I think, I don't know, maybe my cousins might argue, but I think out of all my cousins, I had the closest relationship with him, especially in his latter years. And it's because of the amount of time that we spent together, and we would work together. I mean, it was in Florida, so it's thunderstorms, lightning capital of the world would blow up, and so we'd find shelter and we'd just sit down. And we'd sit there for, you know, 15 to 45 minutes waiting for the storm to pass, and we'd sit there and rest. Or in the afternoons when I come home from school, maybe I'd go work with him, but maybe he was done depending on the heat of the day or depending on the timing of it all. And many times I'd find him, he'd be outside, and I'd come home, and or I'd just pull into his house. You could see their house from my house. I'd pull in if I was driving or if I got off the bus when I was younger, I'd just run over to his house, my grandparents' house. My grandmother would make me an egg sandwich, and then I would just sit. That's why I have chickens, I need the egg sandwiches. And then I would just sit with my grandfather. In those moments, either resting, recovering from the day, or me resting from my day and his work day that were separate. Do you know the most profound thing I got out of all those moments? The absolute most profound thing. It was absolutely nothing that he ever said. In fact, I cannot remember a single conversation. I can't. With my grandfather, I can remember lots of conversations when we were working together and what he taught me. I cannot remember a conversation when we were resting together. But do you know why I knew my grandfather better than about anybody else on the planet? Because I rested with my grandfather and he didn't have to tell me anything. I was in his presence. I knew what he was thinking. I knew what he'd been through. I knew the work that laid ahead with him. The same with me. Even if he didn't totally understand necessarily all the things in my life, because I was in music and he whistled really well. But we didn't be sheerly being in his presence. Man, I miss those days. Because I knew him. Sure, I knew his story. I knew things about him. I'd heard it tons of times. Like there was lots of external moments, But the parts I remember most is sitting in a 120-degree garage, sitting there on a macrame chair while a storm passed over our head, waiting for it to stop so we might go out and work again, saying nothing. That's what I miss most about my grandfather, because I was simply in his presence. God is way better than that. Do you have those moments with God? Do you have these moments of shared moments with him, or even with other people in him, where you're just sitting there and you don't need a download from heaven. You're not looking to see what he might fix in you, but you're actually just enjoying being in his presence. This deep fellowship and sharing moments and gracious rest, they're all closely intertwined. Don't want to misuse our rest and constantly have to have stuff to do. But who are we doing it with? The who is more important than the what. Lastly, being refilled and not simply emptying yourself. Psalm 116, verse 3 and 4. The snares of death encompassed me. The pangs of Sheol laid hold on me. I suffered distress and anguish. Then I called on the name of the Lord. O Lord, I pray, deliver my soul. Now, rest isn't about you simply emptying yourself. Again, this is why I push against, and I've referenced a few times, you know, whether it's like a Netflix binge or just simply, you know, medicating away your problems in the world in whatever way you see fit. But rest is something totally different when it comes from the scripture. It's not convincing yourself that things aren't as bad as they seem, or that your life, you're really good no matter what anybody says about you, you're really okay. Or even the devil's lying to you. It's not simply just emptying yourself of the negative things in your life. It's actually being refilled by the one, the author of life in the first place. God calls us, and he set up this idea of rest that we might know him, and we might be rejuvenated and refilled by spending time in his presence, by finding rest in him. So when you have your day off, what I'm saying, who are you doing it with? That's an important question to ask. Are you approaching God in the fullness of who he is? The same way that David would, thanking him for who God is. Thanking God for his grace in your life. Thanking him for the fact that he wants to draw near to you, that he listens to you when you speak to him. Thanking him that he wants to share moments with you. That you're not simply just earning his favor and his love, but rather he just wants to be with you. Are you coming to these moments and opening yourself up to the filling, the living water that is available to us in God? God comes in these moments of rest, and this is the best kind of rest, is ones that are filled with God, filled with his presence. And the most refreshing times I've ever had with the Lord has been when I'm empty and when I come to God with nothing to give. And I say, God, would you fill me again? And you know what? The Lord has dealt bountifully with me. Therefore, in him I can return to my rest. Friends, we don't just empty ourselves, let go of the bad things, let go of the challenges. We actually need to be filled with God's Spirit. And he promises to be with us. So as we wrap up our time here, again, this idea of relationship requires rest. We've read this verse before in this series, but I want to say this. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. That's Mark chapter 2. Sabbath was made for you. Rest was made for you. God didn't make you to make you fit into a system, in a system of work and rest. He actually made rest for you to bless you. In so doing, he made it to be a place of rejuvenation, a place of healing, a place of restoration of your soul, such that you wouldn't have to be a person who constantly operates out of a shallow depth or on empty, that you might walk in the fullness of a relationship with him every day in your life as you live and do all the things he, yes, has created you to do in the earth. And so rest for us then isn't simply something that is required of relationships. It is something that restores our relationship. Restores our relationship with God, restores our relationship with each other. Resting with my wife is one of the best things I can do And in fact, when I don't do it, when there's been seasons where I've just been in the grind mode, where I'm just grinding out my everyday life, where I'm grinding out all my responsibilities, where I'm just thinking solely about my work, and my wife is over here, and we've not laughed in a while, we've not spent time just hanging out. Like, I realize after she tells me, usually, I come to her and I say, you know, wife, I say wife lovingly, not like condescendingly, like, hey wife, how you doing? She's like, well, you're not doing very great. And I'm like, thanks. What's going on? She's like, you. In these moments where you're just refusing to stop with everything else going on, you're putting other things over me. Man, I'm so tempted to do that all the time. Even more so with a God who will not complain to me. Rest actually restores our relationships. If you're feeling lonely, might I suggest rest might be the way out? Counterintuitively so. If you're feeling like you're distant from God, might I suggest you rest with Him, that you come to Him, that you experience His grace yet again, that you invite Him to fellowship with you, that you sit in those moments and ask Him to refill you again. See, I don't know how you treat your life. I don't know if you're naturally given to resting. You're probably the minority population here. Most of you are driven people. And you treat your life and your relationships almost like me and that lawnmower man at the beginning. Like, we do a lot of the same stuff, therefore we know each other. It's just not true. There's a deeper place God wants to call us. So I want to challenge you all today. As we end our time together, and as we go back into worship here in just a minute, I'm going to challenge you to declare your love to God for all that He's done. If you're a Christian, if you're a man or woman of God, God has done immeasurable things for you. He worked really hard so that you wouldn't have to, and so that you could be brought into rest with Him. He speaks over you. He declares His promises over you. You are valuable because He values you. You're lovely because He loves you. He determines who you are, and He has spoken great things over you. He calls you into relationship with Him. So for many of us, this looks like for us, we have to admit that we haven't responded to Him in love, and we must, in these moments, or love and appreciation and drawing near to Him. And this is yet again a reminder in a moment to say, hey, tell Him you love Him. Tell Him you're grateful. Thank Him for who He is and what He's done in your life. And receive forgiveness from Jesus for things that you've done to distance yourself, or in the ways that you've shown love, similar to me in my life, where I've shown love to my vocation or my responsibilities or even hobbies more than her at times. The same way with God, we must repent to Him and say, God, you're better than all those things. Repent and turn our lives and receive that grace that He gives to us, which is the grace of His presence. And as we thank Him, begin to change and begin to receive the power that comes from His Spirit, so that we might know true rest all the days of our life and not be ruled by a life of busyness and rushing around. Gosh, that's what's available to us, church. And that looks really good to a world and to a city that desperately needs to experience that. And so as we end today, we're going to take communion. We're going to remember what Jesus did to purchase for us this rest. And as we do, I'm going to ask you to not only worship Him, but as you come and receive communion, to check the internal monologue of your heart and draw near to this God of rest. Would you stand as I pray and we close our time?